AUDACY. Type that into your app search, then download.
This is Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate, Hour 2. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Bridget Prue. Zach Coe behind the glass. Andrew Raycroft stuck down in Connecticut for college hockey duties on ESPN this weekend.
I wanted to ask him about the Svedback. Essentially own goal.
That was a tough one.
That was rough. I was going to ask Razor if he's ever done that before, but...
Yeah, Bruins prospect, Providence College goalie, Friday night in Manchester. First goal against Denver, just like over 2 minutes into the game?
2:25 into the game. Set the whole tone for the rest of the game and put it off the side of the net, came right out into the crease, just open net goal for Denver, and... I thought that my broadcast partner was going to swear. He was like, holy. And I'm like, oh, no, here we go. We're getting fired. But, no, that's how bad it was. That was the easiest goal I've seen the entire season. And it must make you feel awful to do that in the tournament. And I wanted to ask Razor about it, but I'll remember for next week.
Yeah, Nate Lehman, Providence coach, after the game, said, like, he was asked about it and kind of how the team tried to respond and how Svedback responded. And he's like, yeah, he's like, he hasn't done anything like that all season. And then, like, what do you say about it? Like, it happens in the biggest game of the year and, you know, 2 minutes in, it, like, just crazy unfortunate play. But
not to derail the segment by just bringing up a random goalie thing that happened. But there are some texts that we definitely want to get to here because
you want to start with coaches or prospects?
I think I want to start with coaches.
Okay.
Even though prospects would probably have transitioned better.
That's fine. We'll get to both.
All right. So the first coaching text that we got, which I had mentioned, I had put in the group chat, because it seems likely that Peter Laviolette will probably get let go by the Rangers at the end of the season or maybe even before that.
Unless they make a late push. Get in, like, they might even have to win a round, honestly,
and
which seems unlikely.
And I had texted this to you guys, and thanks for not answering, but
no problem.
I had texted you guys this because Peter Laviolette has connections to the area. He used to be the Providence Bruins head coach. It's been a while since then, and he's bounced around the NHL quite a bit, but he does have connections here. He's been part of the organization before. He's married to someone from my hometown, actually, in Attleboro, so... Like, his family knows the area. Like, this seemed like a name.
I believe he was college roommates with one of my coaches growing up, Glenn Corbett. So there's another connection right there.
There you go. So, point being, his name popped up in my mind just kind of came to me the other day because I know that the organization knows him, and I would assume that if he's let go by the Rangers, this will be a candidate for the Bruins job. You know, they'll consider pretty highly, I think.
Yeah, like all these coaches, you know, so there's another one says if from the 781, if the bees have any luck, Pittsburgh fires Mike Sullivan and he comes here as part of a complete reorganization. That's another one with local connections. John Tortorella has local connections. You mentioned his brother at UNH. He's also from here. Like, he grew up in Concord. So, you know, those are the big names. I would be very interested to see what direction the Bruins would go. Like, would they entertain the, you know, for lack of a better word, just call it the retread route, where those guys are all legends in their own right to varying degrees? Is that what they're looking for, where you know there's going to be a level of professionalism brought in, a certain level of respect that those coaches demand because of their resumes, because of what they've accomplished? Or do you try to go younger and target, you know, someone from like the next generation, try to find someone who's about to break through, who can kind of grow with this team and isn't going to get frustrated if this takes a little while, right? Like, John Tortorella would not be a fit. Unless you really think this is a quick turnaround.
Well, he himself said it wasn't going to be a good fit. Not that he said specifically Boston, but he said he didn't want to be part of a rebuild.
Yeah. I mean, like he said that 2 days before getting fired down in Philly. So
I wonder why he got fired. Maybe it was because he essentially asked to get fired. But, like, if he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild, he doesn't want to be part of Boston.
Right. Wouldn't seem that way.
And also, you're going to probably have a lot of young guys in the lineup the next few seasons. Is he? He's not known to be the best coach of young guys. They don't necessarily respond to that coaching style sometimes. So probably not a great fit in Boston. And I know some people, let us know. Are you like fans of Tortorella? But text us, call us. Like, would that be a coach that you'd be interested in them considering? Or would you rather have somebody like Peter Laviolette, who's a little bit more mild, Mike Sullivan, who has, he used to coach up here at BU, and he also,
I don't think he ever, he played at BU. He never coached at BU.
Sorry.
He coached the Bruins.
Coached the Bruins, and he is Charlie McAvoy's father-in-law. So that's another little dimension to it. But I personally like Laviolette and Sullivan as two really good choices.
Yeah, so Sullivan's kind of been my dream target for a while, which really got reconfirmed at Four Nations, just because when you hear him talk, it's like you buy it. It's like you can tell this is a guy who gets it and can get the best out of players. And obviously has been in a tough situation in Pittsburgh where they tried to extend the window with Crosby, Malkin, Chris Letang in their late 30s and really just went about it all wrong. They kept trying to bring in different veterans and making trades, and they really didn't get younger. Like, they didn't do the sort of two-year retool that Washington successfully did. And so Pittsburgh just ended up stuck in, like, this real purgatory where for basically 5 years now, they just haven't been bad enough to, like, drop to the bottom and haven't been good enough to really be a playoff team. And it's just been a bad spot. So
it's crazy to think that the guy that's considered the best U.S. coach, obviously that's how he gets the Four Nations job coaching for the U.S., could get fired. Like, it's crazy. He's potentially, I don't know how high of a percent chance he's going to get fired, but with the way that Pittsburgh's been going, it's kind of just one of those things. He's a really great coach. I don't think they should let go of him, but it might be, you know, just the end of the road there with what's been happening and missing the playoffs for the last few seasons.
Yeah, 617 texter says, I think Peter Laviolette would be a great Bruins coach. He has a history of training younger players, and that's what the Bruins are going to need in this transition. It is, of course, those guys are all going to have a say in it too. Like, would they want to come here? Or do they see it as, that's a little bit more of a project than I'm willing to take on at this point in my career? Like, are they going to be looking for, okay, who's actually closer to cup contention? Because I want to go chase another cup, you know, before I ultimately hang it up and call it a career. So,
but it's Boston. Both of those guys have connections. It's an original six organization. It's, if you believe in Don Sweeney and what the direction that he wants to head, then you probably want to be part of the, you know, getting the Bruins back to the playoffs. Like, even if it's kind of a challenge.
I guess I'm saying, like, what if they don't believe in Don Sweeney or the organization? Like, what if they, like, that looks like a 4 or 5 year project and I don't want to be a part of that. Like, that would be understandable on their behalf. So that would open the door to, you know, do you try to go younger? I mentioned on our podcast, the Skate podcast, that last cycle, when the Bruins ultimately hired Jim Montgomery to replace Bruce Cassidy, they identified, you know, sort of the hot, young, up-and-coming AHL coach. They interviewed Spencer Carberry, who at that time had no NHL head coaching experience. They didn't hire him. Ultimately, they went in a different direction, but Carberry gets hired the next year by the Capitals and is now going to be coach of the year this season. So they've been able to identify those guys too. And I think that's, I know that there's maybe not anyone, we'd speculate, try to throw some names out. But you know, that maybe doesn't grab as much attention, but I think that could be every bit as good an option for this organization where they are as the veteran experienced guy like a Laviolette or a Sullivan. Like, that door should absolutely be open to you, whether it's someone from the college ranks, someone who's in the AHL, maybe a top young assistant on an NHL staff somewhere. You know, everyone's going to mention David Carl, head coach at University of Denver, who, again, you can watch tonight, 7 o'clock against BC.
Do we think Don Sweeney is going to the Manchester Regionals? I didn't see him Friday, but I'm sure there's it's full of scouts and it's full of, you know, if they're looking at Higgins and or want to talk to David Carl or just watch guys that they already have, because there are a few guys playing in that game tonight that are Bruins prospects.
Yeah, I believe he was at one of the Western Regionals. So I don't know if he might be back here for tonight or I'm trying to think. They don't have anyone in the Allentown Regional unless he's looking at free agents or something. So yeah, he may very well be.
And somebody texted us asking about a few of the Bruins picks that are in college. They said, "Do you think Lishmelis, Jelvik, or Gasol might be ready to help in the NHL after the season?" So Lishmelis is a Bruins pick from UMass. UMass got eliminated yesterday, unfortunately. He's good. He's fast. He's a center. He might be closer. Jelvik is injured. And Gasso and Jelvik both play for Boston College. Gasso, you can watch tonight if you want to. He'll be in that BC-Denver game. I think probably Lishmelis is the closest.
Or maybe Gasso. I like Gasso. I still wonder if like he actually sticks in the NHL. But he plays all situations, and he does a lot of things that I like. He has size. Most importantly, that's immediately an advantage over a Lishmelis or Jelvik. Andre Gasso's 6'4", 218. And I would say a solid skater for that size. That'll be the question. Is he going to be a good enough skater to stick in the NHL? Is he going to produce enough offensively? 30 points in 35 games as a junior this season. Usually plays on BC's second line. But like he might be close just because he has the NHL body, and like that alone gives him a little bit of an advantage.
Well, and I say Jelvik isn't as close because he's still dealing with an injury that knocked him out for the season.
Yeah.
So he's physically, you know, still has to recover and heal from that.
Yeah. It really turned into just a tough season for Jelvik. He was over a point per game last year at BC, 42 points in 41 games. Even before the injury this year, he only had 13 points in 23 games. So, yeah, I would say I would not expect Jelvik to help next year.
And also to the point about bringing in maybe potentially bringing in a college coach, and you name David Carl because he's won two national titles already in the last three.
Two world junior gold medals.
And he's young. And he's definitely an up-and-coming coach that will be in the game a long time, whether that means he stays in college or goes to the NHL, remains to be seen. But the thing about trying to get a guy out of college is those jobs are pretty secure, whereas NHL jobs are not. So the money is obviously different. But a few of these coaches that have come up in, you know, rumors like Nate Lehman and David Carl, like they're getting paid decent amounts with the colleges that they're at.
They're not struggling to pay the bills.
They're not.
They're doing okay.
They're not. And I also do think that if you are going to have a young team, college coaches have experience in that as well. These are guys that are usually pretty patient but stern enough with the younger players to get them where they need to, you know, go developmentally. And I brought this up on the podcast. I like Ben Barr. Ben Barr from Maine, unfortunately, they got knocked out of the tournament as well. But Ben Barr from Maine is a great option. I think he's done a good job with helping Maine kind of in their little mini rebuild that they've been doing. They've gotten better since he has become their head coach. And he's pretty young as well. And he's, I don't know, I just have a lot of respect for him. And I think he would be a good option as well. But he's just starting at Maine, so... And that's a comfortable job. It's not going to pay as much, but sometimes it's just about, you know, enjoying your family and enjoying your job. And if you like it, you're not going to leave.
Right. Like, I think David Carl probably stays at Denver. He absolutely has it made there. The other one you hear a lot of Bruins fans throw around is Jay Pandolfo at BU, who obviously was an assistant with the Bruins for years before he went to before he jumped to BU. He's been head coach at BU for 3 years. They are going to a third Frozen Four. 3 for 3. By the way, he was also 4 for 4 as a player. So as a player and head coach at BU, he has never missed the Frozen Four.
Crazy.
Which is crazy.
And he's great with the younger guys when I watch him. Just trying to coach out those young mistakes, the rookie mistakes, and trying to not get too frustrated. I've given him a run for his money this year. It's a young team, and they made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, they don't like showing up for the first period sometimes.
No.
It's been a recurring issue, but they're in the Frozen Four after a big win over Cornell. So, Quinn Hudson with the overtime winner in that game yesterday. I would be surprised if Pandolfo jumps in the NHL again. A guy who I think just hasn't made a BU, and by the way, may have a son coming through playing there in the next few years.
And that's the thing too. There's a few guys that are college coaches that their kids are about to be the age that they're going to play. Like Northeastern, Jerry Keefe's son's going to play there, I believe next season.
Yep.
Nate Lehman has some teenage kids that I believe are going to be coming up soon. So that's at PC, and yeah, that changes things too.
All right, we got to catch a break. We'll get back more directly to Bruins stuff because we do have to touch on the Nikita Zadorov, Jeremy Swayman situation that arose this week. So Zach Coe's going to have you trending, and then we'll come back and get into that.
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox fell to 1-2 on the season last night after losing to the Texas Rangers 4-3 the final. Rookie Christian Campbell continued to swing a hot bat. He went 2-for-3 with a double and his first major league home run, which tied the game at 2. They'll look to salvage a split this afternoon when Richard Fitz takes the mound opposite former Cy Young winner Jacob deGrom. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. That starts at 1:35 with Joe Weil on the MassMutual pregame show. Then Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks will have all the play-by-play action. First pitch at 2:35. Celtics beat the San Antonio Spurs last night 121-111 to extend their winning streak to 8. Jason Tatum led the way with 29 points. They'll wrap up their road trip tomorrow night when they head to Memphis to take on the Grizzlies, tip off at 8:30. Bruins fell to the Detroit Red Wings 2-1 the final in Detroit. Morgan Geekie, the lone goal scorer for the Bruins. With that loss, the Bees' losing streak is extended to 8 as they continue to fall down the standings. Pair of NCAA tournaments continued yesterday. Over in the men's hockey tournament, BU beat Cornell in overtime to advance to the Frozen Four, while UMass fell to Western Michigan. Later this afternoon, the top-seeded Boston College Eagles will take on the University of Denver in a finals rematch from last year with a spot in the Frozen Four on the line. You can hear that one over on WEEI 850 AM. Coverage starts at 6:45. Then over on the basketball side, top-seeded Florida erased a 10-point second-half deficit to defeat Texas Tech in advance to the Final Four, while another top seed, Duke, handled Alabama to win their region. The Elite Eight rolls on this afternoon when Houston takes on Tennessee, then top overall seed Auburn faces Michigan State for a spot in the Final Four. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Sunday Skate coming up after this.
This is Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
As Swayman and Colin Kemper out to the red line. They're going to go. Look at this. Kemper against Swayman. The referee grabs Swayman. The linesman grabs Kemper. They won't let it happen.
I think it just comes down to sticking up for my teammates. I don't care who it is. It's a guy in the black and gold. You're not going to touch him without getting contested. And
Is that what it is?
Looks like it.
Okay. I don't know. No comment.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. So that was a week ago today. Last Sunday night in Los Angeles. Darcy Kemper kind of throws a little jab headlock at Murat Husseinov after he bumps into him. Swayman decides to go out to center ice and challenge Kemper to a fight. Kemper accepts. Looks like we're gonna have a goalie fight. Refs break it up.
Still mad about that.
Ruin all the fun. Yeah.
Such cowards.
Totally ruined the fun. I mean,
jail.
If they're not going to win 8 games in a row, if they're not going to at least let people have this, let us watch something. I mean, he's going to do it in his career at some point. It is on the career bucket list for him. And I hope he does it in the Garden. I want to witness it.
Which, again, I think is part of the problem where...
Listen, we all have dreams.
And you hear from Nikita Zadorov after the game, and he's asked, because Jeremy Swayman says he's sticking up for Husnadinov. He says, you're not going to touch one of my teammates. Nikita Zadorov, who has also made a living of fighting, sticking up for teammates, is asked if he appreciates Swayman doing that. And as you heard there, responds, is that what it is? And then when he said that's what Fluttershins out of the Athletic says that's what it looked like, he gives a no comment, which was, I thought, very telling. Now, Nikita Zadorov did then meet with the media again on Tuesday and clarified / walked back his original comments, so I want to play those. So let's play that, Zach.
When you ask the question like this after 7-2 loss, the players are frustrated. So obviously, the time I was frustrated, and wherever I said it wasn't towards this way, it was just like I didn't expect that question from you. And sometimes, like, you gotta understand the situation we are at and everything. You pissed off to the game, so I was just basically saying, try to stay away from, find positives. There was a lot of negatives in our game, and I want to keep that way. You know, obviously. We appreciate in this room guys stepping in for each other, and that's a culture that was here before I came here, and I'm trying to follow it as the guy who steps in for teammates. We got Lux, we got Taff, we got everybody. You know, Sway, we need to do anybody in this room. Until I'm here, it's going to step up for each other, and that's the main part for us. So I think he wasn't even thinking, like, comment towards Sway or anything like this. So it was just a took out of the contest. Obviously, he's a huge part of our team. He signed for the next 8 years, and here I'm here for 5 years. We're going to be together for a long time and be a lot of success with this team and back in the playoff hockey and hopefully win the cup in here. So I think that's where we're going to leave.
So, look, in these situations, I always think there's a little more truth in the original comments. Yes, sometimes guys say things under frustration in the immediate post-game interview that maybe they don't really mean, but in this case, like, it would have been very easy for Nikita Zadorov to say that on Sunday night, or even just a shorter version of that. Just say, yeah, we appreciate guys stepping up for teammates. That's all he needed to say. Just cliche, easy answer. It was right there in the question was, do you appreciate him stepping up for a teammate?
But you hear him explaining himself, and it makes sense to me that he was just really frustrated, because he was frustrated with the question being spun in like a positive way. And he said, we just wanted to talk about the negatives. There's no positives in the situation that they're in. Basically, when someone asked him, you know, was there at least this bright spot about Swayman stepping, he wasn't having it because he didn't think there was a lot of positives from the game. And I guess that wasn't one either. So I think there's a little truth to the original statement, but you could see and hear in his voice how frustrated he was after the loss. And that makes you, you know, not think super carefully about what you're going to be saying and how it might affect your teammates. Because what I do respect about Zadorov is he never wants to be the guy that is causing the drama. Like, he would rather be the one who is ending the drama and, you know, standing up for the teammates rather than causing any extra attention to something like this with Swayman.
Well, and he's clearly has been one of the guys who's tried to step up as a leader since the trade deadline. Jeremy Swayman has as well. And I think you're seeing guys who are kind of learning on the fly and trying to figure that out. And in this
case, called it media training. He called it like a media lesson, essentially.
Yeah. And like in this case, like, that was a pretty obvious misstep where, yeah, he created the story for the day. And like, I know he's trying to blame, like, he basically accuses Fluto of blowing it up. And then he says, you know, social media like ran with it, made it up. And it's like, well, you said it. Like, none of that happens. Nothing gets blown up if you don't say that. So yeah, like, you created a story. That's not what you want to do as a team leader. And do I think it's the end of the world? No. Do I think they can get over it? Yes. Like,
and they don't dislike each other.
Yeah. No. Like, look. Yeah, I don't think, like, the room hates Swayman or anything like that, which I know some people seem to think that. I will say, like, I do think sometimes some stuff Swayman says and does might rub guys the wrong way. And, like, in this case, trying to start the fight and saying you're sticking up for a teammate, I do think that where I see the truth in, like, Zadorov's initial reaction is that he and probably other guys on the team didn't see it as Swayman defending a teammate. And I think, you know,
and to be fair, neither did I. I don't think that's what he was doing. I think,
yeah, like, I think he wants,
I think
to,
he saw his opportunity.
He wants to get in a goalie fight, and yes, he saw an opportunity to get in a goalie fight.
Exactly.
And there were probably guys on the team who were like, maybe not the time for it. You're on the road. It fires up the road crowd in a game where you're down by a goal at the time. Then you give up four more goals after. So, yeah, I do think there's an element of guys kind of looking around going, like, just stop the puck. Like, we didn't need a goalie fight in that situation.
We need Razor. How do we not have Razor for the, like, goalie fights is a Razor topic here.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to see if, like, Razor's opinion has changed post-Zadorov walk back. But I did hear Razor on Morning Brew with Billy Jaffe, I think, like, the morning after Zadorov's initial comments, you know, Monday morning, basically said kind of what I just said. Like, he thinks the reason you get that reaction from Zadorov is because no one has ever expected a goalie to be an enforcer and to step up and fight for a teammate. Razor was like Razor even said, like, I've been around hockey a long time. That's never been a goalie's job.
No.
So
it's,
yeah,
true,
like,
and I think Zadorov sees things in a very black and white way in a lot of different situations. Like, okay, if my player gets run, I have to fight this guy. Like, it's the old school mentality that he has, and a goalie's role is to stop pucks, and it's black and white. And it's not, it doesn't need to have this, you know, this extra fighting dynamic that Swayman, and Swayman, he's been on record saying he wanted to do this already, but this is a goal of his. And, yeah, maybe pick the right spot. It wasn't meant to be, was it, Scott? Because we didn't get to see it yet. It still caused all this drama. So maybe we'll see it someday, but I don't know. I'm still mad we didn't get to see it. But,
well, and look, I mentioned that maybe sometimes stuff like this, or, you know, Swayman always tries to find this, like, find the silver lining.
Which is the opposite of what Zadorov does.
Yeah, so, you know, he always tries to find the silver lining, look for the positive after games, say they're going to grow from it and all that. And, like, I think sometimes that feels like the right chord, and sometimes it feels a little out of place. So, again, like, another guy who's learning on the job of, like, how to be one of the voices of the team. You know, Jeremy Swayman's not just one of the two goalies anymore. Like, now he's one of the three franchise pillars, along with McAvoy and Pastrnak. So it's like, that's kind of a different spot. That's sort of adds extra weight to what you say and do. And this is the first year he's going through it, and he's trying to learn how to do all that while having a bad year, just a bad year. And it just has not been his season. Got off to the delayed start with the whole contract negotiations and all that, missing camp, missing all preseason, and just has really never gotten it on track. And that's the other part that would solve all of this, is, like, if Swayman's playing great and he's one of the best goalies in the NHL, then everything he does is loved, just like it was last spring when he was the best goalie in the playoffs for two rounds, right? Like, didn't matter what he said or did then. You know, you had, like, the Amazon Prime series where he's, like, still referencing going to arbitration and stuff, and it's, like, I know some people were annoyed by that, but most fans, I think, were like, whatever, the guy's stopping pucks, so who cares? And that would be the same thing now. It would be like, yeah, maybe he shouldn't have tried to start a fight there, but hey, he's going to be a Vezina Trophy finalist, so who cares? And they're going to the playoffs.
No, but it would be even more positive than that. It would be like, oh, this guy, he wants to do everything for this team. He wants to be involved as much as possible with helping getting this team fired up and going. And that's how it would have been received if this was a winning team.
Yeah. Instead, his last five starts, numbers aren't pretty. 0-5 with an .831 save percentage. 22 goals allowed. Last night was the first time in five games he had given up fewer than two goals. I mean, fewer than four goals. So last night he gives up two on 22 shots. And like I said, he did make some big saves as that game went on to keep it a one-goal game. The first goal, unfortunately, you'd like a save there. It's off the rush. It beats him off the bottom of the glove. Clean shot from top of the left circle, basically, that he just doesn't make the save on. So even in a game where you're like, okay, hey, at least kept it to two, didn't give up the 4, 5, 7 he'd given up in some recent games, still doesn't quite feel right because you lose by a goal and he gave up a goal that probably should have been saved.
Yeah, the broadcast took an opportunity to kind of lay into Mason Lori for his mistake as well.
Terrible turnover.
Yeah, bad turnover. And they were not, you know, they weren't giving him a way out for the, you know, he's young. They're talking about his plus minus numbers and how bad in the minus he is. And it's just, I thought it was interesting because we don't really hear that locally for obvious reasons. It's Nesson and it's, you know, and we do talk about his mistakes, but they kind of went more in depth than the normal just saying, oh yeah, turnover, bad spot, bad time. But yeah, I felt a little bit bad for him in that moment.
Yeah, look, it continues to be the growing pains of a young defenseman who's probably playing more minutes than he should be right now because, again, you're without your top two defensemen in McAvoy and Lindholm. So Zadorov, bigger role, Lauri, bigger role, Andrew Peak, Henry Jokiharju, like, all getting thrust into more minutes, tougher matchups than they really probably should be getting. All those guys should basically be slotted a full pairing below where they are now. So, yeah, you're going to see them get exposed and make some mistakes at times, and that continues to happen. With Lauri, you see stretches where it looks really good. I thought kind of like that stretch right after Four Nations where they were without McAvoy and Lindholm again. Like, he played some really good hockey for, I don't know, a handful of games there. And you're like, okay, like, maybe he's going to really embrace this opportunity and run with it. And then you see some regression. And it's like, yeah, that's what happens with young players. You see the flashes, but it doesn't stick consistently. And that's the next step. Like, that's what's going to take Mason Lauri from third pairing, offensive-minded defenseman who gets some power play time, but you have to live with some mistakes to, like, is this guy a legit top four defenseman on a team that can go somewhere? It's that consistency. It's doing it night in, night out. It's not having these steps back where the mistakes return.
It's decision making for him. That's the big issue. It's not that he's, you know, he's strong enough to hold his ground. He does a lot of things really well, but sometimes the decisions, especially on the breakout, are not the right pass or not the right play to make. And you want to see him take advantage of some of that power play time when he gets it. The Bruins don't have a lot of power plays. They don't draw a lot of penalties, but you know, those are certain areas that you thought you could see a step up from him this season. And he hasn't quite made the jump that I thought he would this year. I know in the beginning of the season, we all had our bold predictions, and mine had to do with Mason Lauri being, you know, having a huge season for Boston. And I still can see his potential, but the gear, he still has to find that next gear.
Yeah, one of my bold predictions was that Lauri would take over as quarterback of the top power play unit from McAvoy, which did happen. Injuries part of it. So we won't mention some of my other bold predictions,
yeah,
like Jeremy Swayman winning the Vezina Trophy. That don't get into that.
No, and I
we got to catch our final break. So.
I also said that Pastrnak, Lindholm, Zacha was going to be like a top five line in the league, and that was not what happened.
No.
Maybe if I had slotted Geeky in there, I would have been closer to right, but...
Yeah. All right, we got to catch our final break. If you want to get one of the last words, call or text us, 617-779-7937. We'll be back to wrap up Sunday Skate next.
A-U-D-A-C-Y. Type that into your app search, then download.
This is Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. Scott McLaughlin here with Bridget Crew. We're talking about Jeremy Swayman last segment. We got a text from the 857. Everyone who rips Swayman never brings up the fact he has had a horrible defense in front of him all year. I mean, I think we've brought this up plenty, whether on here or podcast or me in written form in WEI.com. Yeah, of course, the defense has not been good enough in front of him. But it's both. It's not an either or thing. Like, neither one is picking up the other. Neither one has been good enough. So absolutely, defense has been depleted without McAvoy and Hampus Lindholm. Too many mistakes. Poor rush defense has cropped up a lot this season. Losing guys in coverage and zone, not cleaning out the front of the net. Yeah, all of that. Absolutely.
And obviously, since the trade deadline, it's been even more depleted.
Yeah, then you trade away Brandon Carlo, for sure. But there's still, there's really no way at this point you can argue that Swayman has been good despite that, or has picked them up, or has, you know, stepped up. Like, he has not been good enough, and that you can look at pretty much any metric will lay that out. Like, just if you use goal save above expected for one, which takes into account the quality of chances that you face, how many chances you face. 48 goalies this season have played at least 25 games. Money Puck has Jeremy Swayman 41st out of 48 in goals saved above expected. Like, even if you want to take issue with that formula or how they come up with that number or whatever, it's like there's still no way to argue that he's been anything approaching good.
What's the number?
Good enough.
What's the actual number?
-8.
So basically, a league average goalie would have stopped 8 more shots.
Basically,
8 more of those.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but like it is. Like, that 8 goals is a lot over the course of a season, you know, in 60 start, or just say 64, like that's one goal every 8 games. You know, that, like, that adds up. So, and that's just to get back to being average. You're paying $8.25 million. The expectation is for him to be a lot better than average. So, yeah, like, you look at, like, league leader, like, Connor Hellebuck's had, like, 30 goals saved above expected. Like, there is a ton of upward movement there that has to happen. And Swayman has been up there before.
Yes.
Like, he was really good last season. He was really good in the playoffs. So, obviously, this year he hasn't been able to do it as the true number one behind, yes, a shoddy defense. It's got to change next year. We've talked about this. Like, if it ends up just being 1 year of this big contract, that's the down season, you can excuse that and be like, well, it was a down year for the whole team. Okay, he picked it up. You start next season slow, like, that's where things start to get really dicey, because what you're banking on is that the clearing your mind over the summer and coming back for the full camp, the full preseason, having more of a normal season prep, you're banking on that turning it around.
And hopefully that some of what you've gone through this season has informed you as a starter and has gotten you closer to what you need to be to play that type of workload, the larger workload, and get you where you mentally need to be.
Can I tell you something I'm rooting for today?
Well, it's not BU because they're not playing today. Is it against BC?
It's not.
It's not. Okay.
No, but I won't do that. I'm covering the game, so I got to be impartial.
Sure.
I am. I'm a professional, Bridget.
Yeah, sure. All right, what is it?
I'm rooting for an Alex Ovechkin hat trick against the Buffalo Sabres.
That, okay.
Alex Ovechkin is currently 5 goals from tying Wayne Gretzky, 6 from passing him. The Capitals are in Boston Tuesday night. They have 1 game between now and then against Buffalo today. I want Ovechkin to, at least in theory, be within striking distance. For a long time, he was on a pace that was putting him on the schedule. Like, I did the math. I was doing the math for a while. There was, about a month where it was man, he's going to be there right around that April 1st game in Boston. And then he slowed down just enough where it's probably not going to happen, that we're going to get a chance to see him either tie or break the record. As I said, he's 5 from tying. Most likely that's not happening by Tuesday night. But big game Sunday, that's what I want to see. Just give it a shot.
Puts him within 2, if he gets the hat trick. So, you need another hat trick to pass, right?
I just want to go into Tuesday night feeling like
it could happen. Yeah, we want to see it. We like to see history. We'd like to see that. I mean, not that we're necessarily rooting for the Capitals to win, but feels likely.
What else are you going to be excited about watching with the Bruins Tuesday night?
Yeah. No, that'd be cool to see at TD Garden.
All right. That will do it for this week on Sunday Skate. We're back at 9 a.m. next week. Great college hockey day. End of the regionals coming up. You get UConn, Maine. I mean, not Maine. UConn, Penn State.
Yep, nope.
Sorry, man. BC, Denver. Dan Ball coming up next. I think he's taking you all the way up to Red Sox baseball this afternoon. We'll be back next Sunday. Thanks for listening.
Boston College is on fire and might take the championship.